let me go over the point. The first thing that Rav Kook says in that article is that the search for truth is really the search for the articulation of a truth that you already know in your heart. And one of the signs that you've reached that truth is a profound pleasure that you feel that you have found the right philosophical orientation, or I'm sorry, formulation of what you know. In other words, what you're trying to make sense is you're trying to make sense of your sense. You already have a sense of who you are, why you are, and what you can become. That's deep inside you, deep in your unconscious. The Gemara says that when you were in your mother's womb, you were taught all of Torah. So you know the ultimate truth. It's inside of you, and that's what drives you. And really, the search for truth is the search for an articulation, a formulation of that which you already know. Okay? And so Rav Kook begins to explore various philosophical orientations and then points out why it's not quite fulfilling what I know in my heart. My heart is saying, no, that's not quite it yet because it's missing this. I need a little of that. I need a little of this. But I'm trying to find the philosophy that matches my inner knowing. All right. So he talks about the problem of monotheism, whereby monotheism leaves my heart dissatisfied because I come away with an understanding that I am far and separate from God, and that he ultimately is the fortunate one. And he's somewhere up in heaven in his ivory tower, watching us down here, scurrying around and trying to figure out our lives. Yes, he loves us, but why is it that he's not, you know, going through what we're going through? I shared with you, I'm not sure if it was this group, another group, there's a very powerful Elie Wiesel story. I don't remember the details, but I remember the general point. It's a story about a little boy that was framed by the local evil anti-Semites, and they decide that, and the boy is charged and judged as a criminal. He's a little boy, and he was beloved to the entire Jewish community, and they called him the Malach because he was so pure. And this was the way that, you know, these anti-Semites were going to torture the Jewish community by essentially passing judgment on this boy, and they're going to hang him in the square. And the father, in his moment of the most devastating anguish, turns to Hashem and says, let's make a deal. You become man, and let me become God. And God, apparently, in this, from what I remember in the story, is a little bit hesitant to make this deal. And Hashem says, okay, you know what, I'll make this deal with you, but for 24 hours. I'll let you see my perspective on things, and I will assume your perspective on things. And the father says, okay, but Hashem says, but at 24 hours, we switch back, right? And so basically the story is now God has become man has become God, and God is having a real hard time, you know, and he's anxiously waiting for the 24 hours to be up. And then he turns to man, who's now God, and says, okay, it's time to switch back. And from what I recall in the story, man doesn't want to switch back. So it's the monotheistic orientation leaves people feeling like, you know, that you have this wonderful life, God, you're perfect, you're happy, you know the end of the story, so there's, you know, you're not in any way stressed out. So why are we, right? So Rav Kook says that feeling that God is the most fortunate of all and feeling this element of resentment and jealousy of God doesn't feel right in my heart that could be God. That doesn't feel like the right approach to a God. So he then presents us with the panentheistic approach, but not in its purest form, whereby he says that there's an inclination philosophically towards a belief in an all-encompassing oneness where there's nothing but God, and the fact that we experience and witness separateness between ourselves and God is really a blindness of the mind. But in truth, we are one with God. There's nothing but God, and the separation that we feel is really blindness, okay? He says, but that doesn't satisfy another thing that the heart demands to be in this philosophical picture. And what was that? What? Free choice. In other words, in monotheism, I have free choice, and I can accomplish, and I will. There will be consequences to my behavior, but there's this feeling in my heart that is resentful about God just watching from above. The all-encompassing attitude, the enod mevado perspective, that there's really nothing but God, then leaves me with, but my heart demands a prominent place for freedom, for justice, for choice. So give me a philosophy. What I'm looking for is a philosophy that on one hand has the advantage whereby there is nothing but a Kodesh Baruch Hu, enod mevado. I exist within him, I'm a facet of him, and yet there is a prominent position for my free choice. I sense in my heart that free choice is real, that free choice must have a prominent place in my world philosophy. Yeah?
How is it that in the final model, there's more room for justice than in the all-encompassing God?
Well, in the all-encompassing God, there is no justice because I could never go wrong. So there is no justice. Because if there's nothing but God and I am included within him, I'm a facet of him, surely a facet of God couldn't go wrong. And therefore, there is no justice and there is no choice. And therefore, my life is meaningless because I cannot honestly pat myself on the back and said, hey, way to go. You really did something of significance. You took a risk. You worked hard. You earned justifiably your consequences. There is no consequences in that view. That's why the second view was really pantheism. It wasn't panentheism. The first view was monotheism. There's a God over there. The second view is really pantheism, which is there's nothing but God. Oh, but there seems to be tables, chairs, and birds and bees, and they all seem to be separate, and they all seem to have their own independent identity. And the answer is, no, it's just blind. Well, so then I don't have to do anything. I just have to stop being blind. But in our hearts, we know that freedom is real. And we in our hearts demand a life philosophy that includes justice and justifiable consequences. And without the power to choose, then there can't be any justice. And yet, somehow in our hearts we believe that a proper philosophical worldview would include a significant place for justice. So now let's get to the third thing, and then you can ask some more questions, okay? So Rav Kook is basically saying that you need a philosophy where justice is real, where freedom is real, and that a person has the ability to choose to become more godly. In the second approach of the pantheistic approach, you are actually godly already. You just don't know it, and you got to get the blinders off you to see it. But you don't really do anything but just wake up to that truth. But here, you have to make choices, you have to work hard, and you have to earn your godliness. So that's when I brought in the old idea, and that was we're going to look at these sources today, where essentially we talked about, you know, we've all been told that God is absolutely good. We've all been told that. A lot of people struggle with believing in God because they just simply don't see his goodness. If God is absolutely good, then how is it that there are people in this world that can do evil, that can choose evil? Why are people suffering? Okay? And that leaves you with this feeling that God, if he's absolutely good, he's somewhere in heaven. Okay? He's somewhere over there watching us. And that just seems so mean. How could he watch us, you know, while we're in the concentration camp? And the question really is, where was God in the Holocaust? And for those of you that are going to Poland, this will be part of the answer to that question. So So Rav Kook basically says this, but it's based on the Arizal, and I could bring you a lot more sources, but there's no reason to bog you down with sources. Basically, what is the ultimate definition of absolute goodness? So we had shared that, let's say I have two friends. One friend is good, was good, always will be good, cannot but be good. He is rich, was rich, cannot but be rich. All right, so he does kindness. He's a bit of a kindness robot, but, you know, he does kindness. I don't think we would say that's not kind, right? Then I have a friend who's not naturally inclined to be kind, right? He's got a real yetzer. He's got an inclination that battles against kindness. And he also doesn't have a lot of resources. Now, these two people pick up the Torah, and they happened upon the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim, which is to be hospitable, okay? So the guy who was kind is kind, cannot but be kind. When he sees the mitzvah of being hospitable, what does he think? Well, great, I've been doing that anyways. I cannot but do that. I've always been doing that. And now I'll get rewarded for it? Great, okay? Is he a good guy? He's a good guy. But how good is if he can't be bad? He's not capable of being bad, right? He's not capable of being bad. So he's a good guy, but how good is that goodness, right? But then you take my friend who isn't naturally inclined to be kind. He sees the mitzvah of the hospitable, and he decides, you know what? This is a real stretch for me. I am going to get out of my comfort zone. This is really a battle, but I'm going to win it, and I'm going to have people over, right? Did he do kindness? Yes. So which one demonstrated a greater good? The one who is kind, was kind, always will be kind, cannot but be kind? Or the one who had to really choose to become? I think we all intuit that the guy who conquered his inclination and demonstrated kindness is a much richer kind of kindness. So now we bring that back to God. If God is absolute goodness, does God have to be good? Or does he have the possibility to choose to become good? If you say that God does not have the possibility to choose to become good, then you're saying that God isn't absolutely good, right? And that would be a problem. If you say that God is not good and is free to choose to become good, then that would be a problem too. So really, what our mystic masters are telling us is that when we describe the absolute goodness of divinity, we end up with a paradoxical formulation. That within divinity is a paradox, right? Whereby God was and always will be good, and yet includes the possibility to choose good. And that's who you and I are. We're, so to speak, the ungodly side of God. All along we've been talking that you as a soul are a chilek eloka, you are a part of God. But the question is, well, but if I'm a part of God, then how could I have free choice? And if I'm a part of God, what part of God am I, so to speak? And of course the word part sounds like a slice of pizza, and we don't mean it that way. That's rather an aspect, whatever words we use. And the point is that there's nothing but a Kadosh Baruch Hu. All is included within Hashem. We are facets and aspects of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, right? What facet of divinity are we? We're the non-divine part of the divine. We're the ungodly side, the ungodly aspect of God that can choose to become godly. And that's who we are. That's why we're here, right? Hakol bara lichvodo. Kodesh Baruch Hu created everything for his kavod. What does that mean? What is kavod? Who deserves kavod? Who is an honorable person? So I gave you an example last week. Let's say you have a fellow and he's with his unit and bullets are flying, they're in the middle of a battlefield, and this is the possible end. And this guy courageously jumps into the middle of the battlefield, he saves the day. Right? They decide to give him what's called in Hebrew an ot kavod. They're going to reward him. There's going to be a major celebration and honor him, right? And as they give him this trophy or whatever they give him, right? This medallion, whatever, this medal. He says, listen, before I receive this, I just want to tell you all that I'm actually psychic and I have absolute perfect psychic power. So I knew nothing was going to happen to me, right? As well as something that most people don't know about me, I'm made of iron. I'm actually Iron Man. And so bullets, if they did hit me, would fly off me. Would we consider this person worthy of being honored? No, because he didn't take a risk, right? He didn't really make a choice. You have to understand, to make a choice, there's got to be a risk. Are you telling me that God is missing the possibility of the advantage of making choices? Well, he knows it all, so he couldn't take a risk. But what our mystic masters are telling us is within the divine is the possibility. A part of the divine doesn't know it all. A part of the divine can take a risk. A part of the divine is ungodly and can choose to become godly. Now you have to remember, this is a possibility. If you say that God has to include this facet, then that would be a limitation. If you say that God could not possibly include this option, that would be a limitation. And since we're talking about the unlimited, so within the unlimited is the possibility for the limited. Right? And that's who we are. That's who we are. So that's the kavod. So when angels say, where is God's honor? The answer is, where is God's honor? Where do you see God's honor? Your God's honor. If you choose to overcome your inclinations that are negative and choose kindness, choose love, choose peace, choose justice, choose intelligence, right? Choose compassion. That's who we are. Right? That's who we are. And now you know what all Judaism is about. You know, I met this guru. Somebody, I think I told you the story. I got a call from this Israeli fellow who said that his guru is in town from India. I told you the story?
No.
No? So his guru was in town from India. Yeah, didn't speak. I told you this, right?
Right.
And so we were, this was before we had a yeshiva. And so the guru came, is dressed in this beautiful pink, orange, you know, robes, long hair. Looked just like the Beatles with the Maharishi, you know. And he doesn't speak. He hasn't spoken in 15 years, but he writes. So they gave me as a gift his book. His book is called A Practical Guide to Divinity. And I said to the guy that gave it to me, I said, well, you know, this book was written a long time ago. Because that's really what the Torah is. The Torah is a practical guide to divinity. You're never going to be God. Right? That's not why you're here. You're here to become more godly. And that's what we talked about the other day. That when people think that the goal of Torah is to be moral, they're wrong. You should be moral without Torah. Derech Eretz Kadma la Torah. You should be a mensch before you get here. If you're not a mensch, right, then that's a problem. We have to teach you to be a mensch. Torah's goal is not to make you moral. You should already be moral. Torah can help you be more moral. You could be moral but not godly. But you couldn't be godly and not moral. Right? But the goal of a Torah life is to be kadosh. And to become kadosh means to be more godly. Because kadosh ani, kadoshim to you, Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying, I am holy, and you're going to become holy. You're the part of me that can become holy. I'm already holy. But included within holiness is the possibility to become holy. You're that possibility, but now it's up to you. Are you going to choose to turn that possibility into actuality? That's where your choice comes in. So now we have a philosophy that on one hand says there's nothing but God. And if there's nothing but God, am I an illusion? No. If there's nothing but God, am I God? No. Well, then who am I? I'm a part of God. I'm an aspect of God. But if I'm an aspect of God, then how can I have free choice? The answer is that that's exactly the point. You're the part of God that's ungodly and can choose to become
godly. I thought you said
godly.
God also has free choice, so it wouldn't even
no,
be contradictory.
Wait a second. When we say God, we're talking about the universal, all-encompassing reality. The free choice side of God is where?
In us.
Exactly. That's right. So, yes. But how does the free choice of divinity become manifest? It's through you and me. Okay? Through you and me. And that's the goal of a Torah life. What's amazing about Torah is these halachas help you become a holy person, a godly person. Not just a good person. You want to be a good person? There's lots of, you don't need all these halachas to be a good person. You want to be a good person? I know lots of good people, right? The goal of Torah isn't to be a good person. You should figure that out. You know, there's lots of good people in the world. I think Torah definitely could help you be a good person, right? But for a person to say to you, I don't need to keep a Jewish life because I'm a good person. You should not say, no, you couldn't be a good person not keeping a Jewish life. That's not true. They could be a very good person, right? But the question is, but are you a godly person? You're good, but are you godly? And they'll say, well, what does that mean? Well, okay, so that's why you got to come to a right time. We're going to talk about what it means to be godly. Why would I want to be godly? What does it feel to be godly, right? Meet people that radiate godliness, okay? So, essentially, the point is that we have now found a philosophical approach that has given our heart the peace that it's looking for, that your free choice is real, your free choice is significant, there are real consequences to your behavior, and yet ain't od mavado. There's really nothing but a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And you are a facet of him, but you are the facet of a Kodesh Baruch Hu that can choose to become godly. Right? In other words, the question is, does God have to be good, or can God choose to become good? If you say that God can't choose to become good, then is that not a limitation? If you say that Hashem can choose to become good, but he's not already good, that would be a limitation. The answer is that within the realm of possibility, again, it doesn't have to be this way, but Hashem, while already being absolutely good, includes the possibility of choosing to become good, and you're that possibility. Right? There's a part of God that is ungodly and that can choose to become godly. That's who you are. Right? So after all these teachings, you have to realize that you have the potential. When you're creating the image of God, it means you have the potential. You're created with the potential to be godly, but you got to do something. And more important, you've got to be brave to choose. Right? To choose. Yeah.
So from that model, from that panel that we had last week, where you, Rubini and Rablau, kind of discussed God's goodness, I was kind of under the impression that you were more in the same camp as Rubini, as like Hashem runs the world model, as all actions post facto are for the good, but kind of what I'm getting now is that your model is more in line with Rublau's theology, which is saying that you have to choose that good, and that post facto, no, that action that you did was bad.
Right. Well, my model includes both of them, right? I'm a Pisces, and you know, Pisces, they are two fish that go in completely different directions. We are paradoxical people. We love paradox. Just like Rav Soloveitchik said, the path to paradise is paradox. Okay? My path is paradox, and so is the path of the Arizal. The path of paradox is that and we haven't gotten there yet. We're moving towards that, which is you have free choice, but your free choice is still going to play out God's plan. It's just you're going to suffer. So yes, in the bigger picture, yeah, it's all good. God runs the world, and there's no choice you could make that will undermine the plan. But the question is, how will you experience the plan? Right? It might not feel good to you. It's all good. God runs the world, and it's all going to be good. But is it going to be, are you going to see that good? Did you make choices that enabled you to be a conscious player in the story of his story? Right? So, yes, Hashem runs the world, part of running the world is that he has given us free choice, because that's really the goal of the world. Shekol bara lichvodo, he created everything for the purpose of manifesting kavod, right? And for there to be kavod, there has to be choice, hard work, risk, in order for there to be a demonstration of true kavod, true honor, an honorable act. So everything will be okay. It's going to be okay. Right? It's going to be more than okay. It's going to be great. But we haven't gotten to that point yet. We're now talking about the free choice side of it. Okay, we haven't yet talked about the determinism side of it. Okay, but basically within the context that it's all going in the right direction, you can make choices that will mess you up. You can't mess up God's story. You could mess you up. And you will be making choices that will prevent you from experiencing that you were a part of the oneness of God. That will be your hell. That will be your hell. So really, this position that I'm presenting here, which is based on the teachings of the Arizal. And again, I'm using Rav Kook, but I've got lots of other sources. It's just become very burdensome to go through all those sources. Okay. Yeah.
Was it really, worth it to create man with the potential for absolute goodness while at the peril of immense evil and serious suffering? Because, you know, it seems, especially in like the world today, and if you look at history, that suffering and the pain prevails, and the absolute goodness is a very rare commodity. So I don't really understand why God would create a world in that way.
Well, we got a lot more to deal with, but what you need to remember is who is experiencing this pain in the first place. You see, when you're in the monotheistic model, then why is God doing this to me? But when you're in the panentheistic model, then the question is, why is God doing this to a part of himself, right? So if I get a sliver in my finger and I take a needle and I start pulling it out, if my finger was self-aware, it would say, why are you doing this to me? And what would I say? I say, first of all, amazing that you can talk because you're a finger, right? But besides, once I get past the marvel of my finger talking to me, right, I'd say, what are you talking about? So the question is, where was God in the Holocaust? The answer is, he was in the Holocaust. And the question is, why would God allow a part of himself to be in the Holocaust? But you see, as you know, me growing up as a child of a survivor, my big problem was I felt like a victim, right? Like, why is he not suffering as much as me, right? And now the answer is, he is, right?
So that even enforces the question, though, why would God do that to himself?
Yeah, or to a part of himself.
Part of himself.
Yeah. Well, obviously the payoff's going to be much greater than, you know, it's like, you know, I got engaged to this woman, and this is after I was married. Just joking. I got engaged to this woman, and it was terrible. It was just terrible. And her family split us apart, and I was crushed for at least a year. You know, I thought she was my soulmate. I thought this was so unfair, and I suffered for a whole year. I'm gonna spare you the details, but it was really. It was a torturous year to be able to let go of this relationship. And you know what? Now looking back at it, it was just so perfect. It's exactly what I needed. It's exactly what helped me be ready for my real soulmate. And so there's things that you go through that right now just feel so terrible. But later on, you look back at it all and you say, oh my gosh, it was always and only a gift. You know, and so that's very hard. But it's all good, you know. It really is all good, but it doesn't always feel good. But even when it doesn't feel good, it really is all good, you know. It really is all good. So, I have an idea for an animation of an author that writes a script and then assumes the character that he wrote. And it's a very difficult script. You know, it's a painful story. And yet, there's a side of him that knows the ending, and yet he as the character doesn't know the ending, which is why he as the character is able to make these choices in the story. So, yeah. the question was this all worth it? And the answer is going to be absolutely was all worth it. It was all worth it. But right now, it's hard to see that. But I can tell you in that particular part of my life, yeah, what I learned about myself, what I learned about love, what I learned about life, I couldn't have learned it without getting my heart broken. Sometimes, Rav Nachman of Breslov says there's nothing more whole than a broken heart. That doesn't make sense. What could be whole about a broken heart? Through a broken heart, you really discover what a heart was in the first place. And sometimes you can't know. It's just like, don't know what you've got till it's gone, paved paradise, put up a parking lot, There's some pasuk from somewhere. And sometimes you've got to lose it to find it. And then you'll realize that the losing it, you gained everything by losing it. So, yeah.
My question is kind of like the classic, 7-year-old question, when you do something, why are you doing this? Oh, because I want to. Why do you want to? Because, it makes me feel good. Why do you feel good? So, if we are...
They asked you that question when you were 7-year-old?
No, yeah. Just they're always asking, why?
Okay.
So, this is, if we are the aspect of God that allows there to be absolute goodness, what is...
No, I didn't say allows to be absolute goodness. Within the definition of absolute goodness is the possibility for a goodness born of choice. It doesn't have to be. But if you tell me that absolute goodness cannot include the possibility of choice born of goodness born of choice, then absolute goodness would be limited. And that's the point. The point is, how and why would God create man if God is absolutely good? And from this mystical point of view, from this Kabbalistic point of view, because absolute goodness includes the possibility of goodness born of choice. And we are the embodiment of that possibility.
Okay. Right? So if we are the embodiment of that possibility, what is the value of achieving absolute goodness? This may be a question we answer.
There's no value. You're not going to choose absolute good. You don't need to. That's not your job. Your job is to make another good choice. That's your job. That's what you're here to do. Your job is not to become perfect.
Right.
Your job is to just become a little better. Just keep a little better. Just keep growing. That's what you are. You're about growth. We love growth. And that will be when you get back from Poland. We'll be doing sources about why we love to grow and why we need to grow. But it's not like this story will ever end. This story is not going to end. This story is an endless story where you will be able to constantly grow and experience greater and greater goodness, greater and greater wholeness, right? Which is synonymous with goodness in the way I'm describing it. Yeah, Ben. Is there a person that doesn't have choice? That's an interesting question. It's certainly not relevant to you because you and I definitely have choice. Is it possible if they're human? No, they have an element of choice. If human beings have mitzvahs, then they have choice. A mitzvah by definition means you have a choice. Animals don't have mitzvahs because they don't have choice. But as soon as you have 7 or 613 mitzvahs, then there you go. Because you can't have a mitzvah if you don't have a choice. And you don't need a mitzvah because you would just simply be a pre-programmed robot. Right? Animals don't have choice, but human beings do have choice. Right? The question is, what is the parameters of their choice? And also the other thing is, what are you actually being judged for? In other words, let's say you got this guy and he grew up in a home where the father was a drug addict, or the father was a drug dealer, and the mother was a drug dealer, and all the friends were drug dealers. What's the chance of this kid not being a drug dealer? Right? Pretty slim. So does he have free choice in that? Right? Does he really have free choice in that? But let's say this kid, grew up in a drug dealing home, and he's making a deal. And he's about to sell, a bunch of heroin. And his conscience is really gnawing at him. Because he knows that it's diluted 10%. And it's just not It's just not being straight, right? This is not straight to do a deal in heroin that's 10% diluted. So he finally says to the guy, you know what? I'm going to take 10% off the price because it's really, you know. Well, the guy's a lowlife. The guy's a dealer, right? No. Within the context of his free choice, that was pretty amazing what he did. And I don't know, but it's between him and God. Right? But I don't know who the tzaddik is for sure. Right? I don't know from Hashem's point of view. You know, so you could say, oh my gosh, so big deal, I got out of bed for minyan today. Who knows? That could have been a huge thing for you. Right? Especially if you had a right time. No, I'm just joking, right? Right? That could be a huge thing for you. Relative to the background and who knows, right? So you don't judge others and don't diminish your choices, right? And just keep choosing to just do it a little better, right? But you have to understand that it's almost as if saying Hashem is counting on you, right? You're serving God. There's something you can, so to speak, do for God, or there's something that this part of God is doing for, so to speak, God, which is choose Kedusha. Kedoshim Tihiyu. You're going to become holy. I'm already holy. Right, but you're the become holy side of me, right? Become godly. I'm already godly, right? But there's an advantage to the part of me that's ungodly and can become godly, and that's who you are. Right? So you got to be really very kind to yourself, which a lot of people aren't kind to themselves. They tend to be easier. They tend to be more kind to others and sometimes to themselves. But you really should pat yourself on the back. When you make a bold choice, right, then you have to reinforce yourself. You should reward yourself. Because, and don't say, big deal. No, it's a big deal. You know? Right? Just stop speaking Lashon Hara about yourself. What's a big deal? It's a beginning. It's a serious beginning. You know, it's one thing to talk Lashon Hara about everybody else. That's really bad. But it's also equally bad to talk Lashon Hara about yourself and say bad things about yourself. Right? Even if you're not saying it to other people, but you say it to yourself. You know, you can't do that. Right? So what we have here is really an amazing teaching. The central theme of Judaism is Ubucharta b'chayim, choose life. It's all about making choices. So what have you come to this world to do? You've come to this world to choose godliness, to choose holiness, to choose goodness, to choose a greater goodness. And people don't want to make choices. Right? People don't want to make choices. I had a friend, he wasn't a religious Jew, but he was looking for a job. And he saw in a magazine that they were looking for a fortune teller in Greenwich Village. No experience necessary. He said, well, that's me. He gets there, and the guy says, well, have you ever done fortune telling? He says, no. He says, that's okay. No experience necessary, but let's try you out. Put a turban on him. Put him in front of a crystal ball. He says, tell me my fortune. He says, well, I don't know how to do this. He says, just say something. So he says, okay, I see things are going to be good for you. No, I need detail. I need color. Give me something. You know, so he says, well, I see that a deal is coming your way. No, give me more detail. Give me more specifics. And so he gets really into it. And the guy says, you know, you're really good. So he gets hired to be a fortune teller in Greenwich Village, right? Making up all this stuff. And he's making a fortune, telling people their fortune, right? And then he felt really bad. He just couldn't go on. So he quits. And the guy goes crazy. The owner of the shop goes, well, you're my best fortune teller. We're making a fortune. He said, I can't do this. I'm ripping people off. I'm just making this stuff up. It's all lies. So he quits. This woman walks in, you know, and she says, I have a meeting with Guji Kami Wami, whatever name he took, right? And the guy said, well, I'm sorry, he quit. Quit? We're in the middle of a reading. He can't quit. I'm dependent on this guy. Everything he said is absolutely uncanny. He is absolutely right every time. Right? So he said, well, I'm sorry. He quit. She hires a private detective to find him, because she cannot live her life without his fortune telling to tell her what's going to be, right? She finds him. One day there's a knock at his door. He opens the door and there she is. Ah, I found you. Finally, I don't know how I've been able to live without you. You are uncanny. You are perfect. You know the future. He said, I am sorry, Mrs. So-and-so. I will return every penny back to you, but I am a fake. No, you're not. She would not believe that he made all this stuff up. What people will do to run away from making choices, right? Because the fear of making choices is taking risks. You see, conclusions are easy. 2 + 2 = 4, that's a conclusion. But you didn't come to this world to just make conclusions. That's easy. Math is easy, right? But to make a choice, who are you going to marry? It's a choice. What job are you going to take? It's a choice. What are you going to dedicate your life to? It's a choice. What lifestyle, what philosophical orientation are you going to take? It's a choice. You've got to make a responsible choice. You can't just flip a coin. That's not a choice, right? You have to do the research. But in the end, there will still be an element of doubt. Because if there is no element of doubt, it's no longer a choice. There will always be an element of doubt. So that there can be risk and there can be glory. Because no guts, no glory. Hashem created the world for his honor, for his glory. No guts, no glory. Okay? You're the guts. Right? And that's what you've come to this world to do. Make choices, reasonable choices, responsible choices, well-researched choices. But don't wait around and wait around hoping that it'll be a conclusion and thinking that your life will be a math equation. It's not. Most of the most important things in your life is not a mathematical equation. Okay, that's it for today.